जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन बल्लभा गिरिवर धाधी गोपी जन बल्लभा गिरिवर धाधी जसोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जसोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यामुना तीरावना चादी जामुनाथी जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी माधव कुंजबिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी माधव कुंजबिहारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धाधी जन बल्लभ गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धाधी यशोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जसोद नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जामुनाथी रावना चाँदी जामुनाथी रावना चाँदी जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी माधव कुंजबिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी माधव जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस हरि विरगचार्य अष्टथर सत श्री श्रीमाधिस्ट डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णवृंद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की और प्रेमानंदी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We took a little break, but we're going to continue with Canto 10, Chapter 28. We're going to start with text 13. The topic is well, after the mistake that was made by Indra and all of that, Sukadeva Goswami then describes another mistake, a mistake that was made by Varuna. And, you know, whether it was Varuna's mistake or his servant's mistake is another topic, but after seeing what Nanda saw, two main things, the opulence of Varuna's abode, his house, it's called in the translation, his palace, and then seeing Varuna and his associates, and mention is made also other devas, opulently worshipped Krishna, as well as Nanda Maharaj seated over there in a special throne. When Nanda came back to Braja, he told everything, and he was astonished, and so was everybody else. And their astonishment took the shape of, gosh, he's the personality of Godhead. And we're just these simple village people, and he's among us, and will he show us his eternal abode? Not like, you know, go back to Godhead, but just show his eternal abode. So then there's all this discussion about prakat and aprakat, leelas and abodes and associates and everything. And then comes Krishna, omniscient Krishna, and the divinity feature of Krishna, knowing exactly what their thoughts were, because they didn't say it to him. They just expressed it amongst themselves, and they were desiring to see the spiritual world. And so that's where we are. Krishna is considering. And some of the same terms as previous texts, this word jana doesn't refer to, it can refer to people in general, but in this case it means his own people. And another term that's used is svam gatim. That's his svam gatim, his destination. So they, those are, there's coming up in the word for the commentaries. So here we go. BBT's long purport. It's got, the language has Sri Dayananda Maharaj's fingerprints on it, because Gopi would use really simple language and Sri Dayananda Maharaj would use 50-cent words. We'll come across a couple of them. Lord Krishna thought, certainly in this world, people in this world are wandering among higher and lower destinations, which they achieve through activities performed according to their destinations and without full knowledge. Thus, people do not know their real destination. So there's double meaning. It's people in general, and it's his people. And there's commentary that we've heard already. It refers to his people. He's speaking about the Vrijvasis, who are thinking they're just ordinary folks. They've grown up in a village, and they're so blessed to have Krishna as their friend, their son, or their lover, or whatever. And now he's the personality of Godhead, so people in general don't know. And then his people don't know. And that, so that's important to see that distinction because it goes back and forth. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami has elaborately explained how this verse applies to the eternally liberated residents of Sri Vrindavan, the Lord's abode. One of the fundamental philosophical principles of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the distinction between two types of illusion, Yogamaya and Mahamaya, the spiritual and material states of existence, respectively. Although Krishna is God, the omnipotent, omniscient, supreme being, his intimate associates in the spiritual world love him so much that they see him as their beloved child, friend, lover, and so on, so that their ecstatic love can transcend the boundaries of mere reverence. They forget that Krishna is the supreme God of all the universes, and thus their pure, intimate love expands unlimitedly. One may consider the activities of treating Krishna as a helpless child, a handsome boyfriend, or a playmate to be a manifestation of avidya. It's a word in the verse also, avidya, ignorance of Lord Krishna's position as God, but the residents of Vrindavan are in fact ignoring the secondary majesty of Krishna and focusing intensely on his infinite beauty, which is the essence of his existence. Paragraph. In fact, describing Lord Krishna as the supreme controller and God is almost a type of political analysis, referring, as it does, to a hierarchy of power and control. Such analysis of levels of power and hierarchies of rule is significant in a context in which one entity is not fully surrendered in love to a higher entity. Clear? Love rules. But when there isn't love, then power rules. So he's almighty. Better obey because you're going to get smacked if you don't obey. So that's power rules. The almighty God. And where love rules, that's insignificant. In other words, says the same thing, control becomes visible or is consciously felt as control when there is resistance to that control. Logical. Or let's say it the other way. When there's love, one may be controlled by love, and that's just fine because I'm happy in love. Control me, go right ahead, I'm happy. But when there isn't love and there's resistance to that control, that's when it becomes more prominent or more significant or more visible. When consciously one is feeling controlled when there's resistance to that control. To cite a simple example, a pious, law-abiding citizen sees a policeman as a friend, well-wisher, whereas criminal sees him as a threatening symbol of punishment. Those who are enthusiastic about government policies feel not that the government is controlling them, but rather that it is helping them. Interesting. Just a little sharing on that point. Some of the communications I'm having with the devotees in China, like how's it going, and not just the coronavirus thing, but everything, because the possibility to visit isn't there. So, wrote, they feel very protected by their government. I mean, it's oppressive. Here's something, you know, and there's no protest of the government. You can't do like, it's not America. You know, no lockdown and people that are out parading around doing what they want to do. China, this is their phrase, China's a government of law. So the law is, there's three things. You can't go from one province to the other, it's like one state to the other, without papers from the government authorizing you presently. Two, if you're a Chinese citizen coming into the country, you've been out of the country and you're coming back, you're under self-quarantine with a camera outside your door to make sure you don't go outside your door. In some cases, they put cameras inside people's homes. Big Brother's watching to see if they're going outside the door. And, you know, invasion of privacy? Forget it, man. You know, this is the government. Government of law. You're self-quarantined. And then after the self-quarantine, they interview you. And then you have 2 more weeks of self-quarantine with the cameras still there. You can go out and do some shopping, but you know, and there's no question of people from outside the country coming into the country. It's not just like, you know, somebody said it. They can't even go from Hong Kong to the mainland. Or mainland to Hong Kong. It's like, it's super controlled. But the people are not feeling controlled. They're feeling, at least some of the people are feeling, that, you know, we're being protected. They're keeping us safe. And, you know, in two letters, like five times in each of those two letters, we feel very, very much protected and cared for by our government. They're used to it. You know, in America, it's a whole other story. You know, probably other parts of the world, it's also a whole other story. You know, when the government wants to quarantine or lock down or whatever it is, stay home or something, it's for protection. I mean, you know, the scientist is for protection. The government, it's another story. But the benevolence isn't sometimes seen if you're resisting the control. But somehow, at least, you know, some persons in China feel the government loves us. With the camp, you know, but the one I read, the person that came back and found it, even before he got there, there was a camera installed in his home. And when the government wants to install a camera in your home, you don't say no. You don't file a case in court, or you know, you just, they're the government. China's a government of law. That's it. We're protecting you. So, in Vrindavan, you know, so we're getting this picture of Vrindavan is love. And then Krishna, so let's hear some more. A simple proof that the residents of Braja have transcended the lower states of God consciousness, that's, he's almighty, he's all powerful, therefore we serve him, rather than failed to attain them, these lower states of God consciousness, is the fact that throughout the past times of the Lord, they often, quote, remember that Krishna is God. Usually they are astonished, which is part of the disclosure of his divinity. It's a secondary rasa. Having been fully absorbed in seeing Krishna as their friend, lover, and so on. Paragraph. The word kama, it's in the verse, is conventionally used to indicate a material desire, or else a spiritual desire so intense that it becomes somehow analogous to intense material desires. Still, the fundamental distinction remains, material desire is selfish and self-gratificatory, spiritual desire is free of selfishness, being holy for the pleasure of the other, the Lord. Thus, the residents of Vrindavan executed their daily activities solely for the pleasure of their beloved. So, in that case, the word kama is being used in this verse to refer to the resident of Braja. They're so much absorbed in loving Krishna and doing everything for his happiness, the word kama is used. It can mean either. Paragraph. It should be remembered that the entire purpose of Krishna's descent in this material world is to attract living beings back home, back to Godhead. Two things are required for this. That his pastimes display the beauty of spiritual perfection, and that they somehow seem relevant and hence interesting to the conditioned souls of this world. So there's majesty and relevance. The Bhagavatam often states that Lord Krishna just plays like a youthful actor, and he undoubtedly engages his eternal devotees in the dramatic presentation. Thus, Lord Krishna here muses to himself that people in this world do not know their ultimate destination, and with an obvious touch of the facetious, that's a Ridhanandamarsh word. Facetious means joking, humorous, tongue-in-cheek, clever. He's not speaking about the residents of Vrindavan, but he's speaking about the residents of Vrindavan. In a joking tone. He also thinks in this way about his own eternally liberated associates who are playing in this world like ordinary members of a cowherd village. Final paragraph. Apart from the double meaning obviously presented in this verse when it is applied to Krishna's liberated associates, Krishna here makes an entirely direct and pointedly critical observation about ordinary people. When applied to conditioned souls who are actually wandering throughout the universe, his statement that people are acting out of ignorance and lust, so avidya and kama are used in the verse, ignorance and lust, ignorance and passion, is not mitigated by any deeper spiritual meaning. People in general are simply ignorant, and they do not seriously consider their ultimate destination. As usual, Lord Krishna is able to say so many profound and complex things in a few simple words. How fortunate we are that God is not a dry field of energy, a transcendent effulgent blob. That's Ridhananda language. Or nothing at all, as various people would have it. In fact, he is the most wonderful personality of Godhead, full of absolute personal qualities, and certainly whatever we can do, he can do better, as evidenced by his brilliant way of speaking. Pretty nifty. Well done, well done. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we're just going to read a few. This is really long, so we'll revisit this verse again tomorrow. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, quote, through lack of knowledge of their soul, avidya, through desires and through karma, my father and the inhabitants of Braja have become confused in this world about the higher forms, the devas, with their great happiness and power, and the lower forms, men, animals, and birds, with their distress and weakness. The confusion arises only because they think themselves ordinary people for the purpose of human-like pastimes. In this role, they do not know their own exalted positions of appearing in Vraja, Svam Gitim, that means Krishna's abode, which is rarely achieved by others. Continuing, quote, when my father saw the opulence of Varuna, which is material, he then considered this Vrindavan to be lower than the planet of Varuna. Even though it is the essence of Vaikuntha, just like a foolish person on seeing an inferior pearl will be astonished at its form and luster and think the valuable pearl to be inferior. Thus, this is Krishna's contemplation, the cowherd men think themselves lower than Varuna and think of liberation and Vaikuntha as higher than the great sweetness they taste in offering their love to me as their son. Liberation and Vaikuntha are both dependent on me. I am not dependent on them. But it is seen in some circumstances that I am dependent on prema. Though it is evident to all, they do not recognize it. Continuing, quote, this is, thus some people realize the happiness of Brahman in liberation. But Brahma Samhita says, this Brahman is the effulgence of my body. This Brahman is without limit, beyond Maya. I say in Bhagavad Gita, I'm the basis of Brahman. Matsya says, my greatness is called Parabrahman. Thus Brahman is my all-pervading formless light beyond material perception, but I am also eternally present in various sweet forms which are relished by senses anointed with prema. Continuing, paragraph. As for Vaikuntha, as the Padma Purana says, quote, the area of Mathura is superior to Vaikuntha. Within Mathura is Vrindavan, the eternal abode of Krishna, which is not affected by even the final destruction of the material world. Thus Gopal Tapani Upanishad says, quote, of the seven cities, of the seven cities on Bhur Loka, Gopalpuri is the very form of Brahman. Gopalpuri exists on this earth just as a lotus floats on a lake. Brihat Vamana Purana says, when the universe becomes invisible at the time of devastation, only the infinite, eternal, non-material Vaikuntha remains, spreading its rays of blissful Brahman. Thus, though Vrindavan is superior to both Brahman and Vaikuntha, the cowherd men desire to attain the experience of Mukti and Vaikuntha only because they had not seen them with their eyes. Therefore, I will reveal them, of these to them, now, directly. And then this final paragraph is interesting. This verse cannot be translated as follows, quote, the Brijvasis wandering in various wombs, higher and lower, by ignorance, karma, lust and karma, do not know about liberation in Vaikuntha, which will be given by me. No. The inhabitants of Braja are Nitya Siddha and in love with Krishna in various relationships of love and are not affected by ignorance, lust, or karma. Bhagavatam says, quote, those gopis who regarded Krishna as their son could no longer be subject to the ignorance of material life. Lord Brahma says, what can you give to these inhabitants of Braja who do not accept a position of liberation or even Vaikuntha when you offer it? That's from his prayers in chapter 14. One should also see the logical explanations given after the killing of Putana. And he makes reference without writing it. Bhagavatam 10:6, verses 37 to 40. And there's just two paragraphs where Jiva Goswami will end for this morning. Although there's more. Jiva Goswami writes, since it is contrary to the truth that his own people will be subject to higher and lower bodies out of ignorance, the meaning of the verse should be as follows. My people, appearing in this world amongst those who attain bodies of devatas and animals by ignorance, and karma are mistaken about my abode because of identifying with ordinary people and do not know my abode. How unfortunate. This is because a portion of their knowledge is covered by absorption in my sweetness. Having appeared in this material world by absorption in my pastimes, becoming unaware of everything else, by possessing various desires related to me, comma, by performing favorable actions for me, karma bihi, and various types of bodies filled with prema, kateshu, forgetting the eternally perfect magnificence of Goloka, my people do not know my abode. Last paragraph. It was said, quote, the cowards never perceive material tribulations. Chapter 11. And it was said, quote, what can you give to the people of Braja whose houses, possessions, friends, dear ones, bodies, sons, life, heirs, and hearts are dedicated only to you? Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers. Words like ignorance are used to express criticism because of remorse arising from compassion. That is, again and again and again, Krishna doesn't like to see his devotees suffer. I've had some exchanges offline with devotees about your question. Your question about why Yasoda and Nanda didn't just go see Krishna in Braja. I mean, in Mathura. They're mom and dad, you know, just hop, skip, and a jump, and there they are in Mathura. Why didn't they? So that's a nice topic. It'd be pretty logical. But there's multiple transcendental reasons. And why they didn't go, and also why Krishna didn't go. But One of the very interesting reasons in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is Krishna explains to the devotees in Dwarka, Uddhava and Balaram and Rohini and others, if I went back, it would make matters worse. So I can't stand to see them suffering, but they would suffer even more. And he gives this logic of why they would suffer even more. Because they've been maintaining their lives and the promise that I would come back, and if I came back, I'd also have to return back to Dwarka. And if I came back to Dwarka, then they wouldn't be able to sustain their lives anymore. And he gives other reasons. If they came, then Kamsa would know, the enemies, the friends of Kamsa that remain, the demons, would know of my affection for the residents of Vrindavan, and they would go and attack them. So I couldn't bear that. I can't go. I want to go, but I can't go. They want me to come. I can't go. They can't come here for similar. Simply, they are sustaining their lives, expecting I'll come. And there's other reasons, but the main point here is Krishna cannot bear the suffering of his devotees. So, well, wait a minute. Devotees go through tribulations. So, and he's God, so he could like not put them through tribulations. So, what's going on? There's tribulations for purification. That's what we experience. And then that because we're attached to the temporary. So Krishna's taking away the attachment to the temporary through tribulations. But when it comes to the Vrijbasis, the tribulations are ecstasies. But it's all under his control. He knows that the difference between tribulations that are ecstasies and the other kind. So they're placed in difficulty, then relieved from the difficulty. Or even he places himself in difficulty in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And they're practically ready to die. Mother Yashoda is ready to give up her life. What's the use of my life if Krishna's in the coils of Kaliya serpent? She runs to go into Kaliya lake and die with the poison. Balaram stops her. And when Krishna sees, okay, it's gone long enough, so then he gets out of the coils of the Kaliya serpent. It's a big jump to go, as the text, the purport, BBT purport says, the distinction between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Big leap. So for us to say Krishna does think because of pastimes, you know, for a materialist, that sounds, you know, that's clever. That's very practical. You know, you just say it's just this pastime. And it's, you know, it's impossible, and well, it's just pastime. It's totally contrary. It's just pastime. You people are silly. But it's beyond rational thought. And why he does things the way that he does things, it's probably not the way we would do things. But he's doing things the way that he's doing things to inspire love and stir in various ways the love of the residents of Vrindavan, which as their love increases, his happiness increases. Where is there any literature? Let's say it the other way. There is no such literature like Srimad Bhagavatam. And particularly we get a sense of it through our acharyas, because reading this verse, if commentators hadn't explained it the way that they had explained it, it would just be Krishna speaking about conditioned souls. But from the earlier references to this word jana, it refers to the people of Braja. The people of Braja are Krishna's jana, his people, they're his family. He has great affection for them. So there's to understand the mood of the resident of Vrindavan takes our acharyas. I mean, Shukadeva Goswami speaking, but our acharyas to explain it. And it's very special. Very, 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 very special. And last thing, just by hearing, it stimulates our attraction for becoming a resident of Vrindavan. And that's why his pastimes are there, to attract souls to come to Swagatim, to his abode, just by hearing, remembering, describing. During a pandemic. We're escapists. You bet. But not in the negative sense, in the positive sense. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much. It's like the question is, Krishna is always protect, and it's hard sometimes to understand why devotees are going through difficulties. So you just explained that for purification, but when it's a transcendental platform, it's an ecstasy. In case with Draupadi, like Krishna protected her when it was the most danger. But at the same time, her sons were killed, and Abhimanyu was killed. And for the mother, sons or children are more kind of dear than her own life. And but then he protected Parikshit. So, like, how to understand that?
I'm sure our acharyas have explained it. I'm not familiar with their explanation. My thoughts are going to what they might say, but I don't know what they said, so I'm reluctant to. But I've got, with this topic that we're discussing, there's so many side research topics that I'm involved in, like this. I still haven't found, I'll share with you. There's a specific reference from Brihad Bhagavatamrita that I and others have not been able to find to make this, you know, why Krishna didn't go and why they didn't go to see Krishna. There's more research. Let me say back what the question is. Krishna gives his protection to the devotees, and for purification, they go through tribulation for purification. But in the case of pure devotees, Draupadi lost her five sons. Abhimanyu was protected. And the other was Parikshit. Parikshit was protected, Abhimanyu was protected, but the sons of Draupadi were not. Abhimanyu was killed. Yes, yes. Ashwatthama was protected. He was spared. Abhimanyu was killed. Five sons were killed. Abhimanyu, or Ashwatthama, was protected. What a bad person. Okay. I'll see if I can get some persons that already know the answer. Anything else in the room?
Maharaj, on the same tribulations topic, you mentioned that Krishna doesn't like to see his devotees suffer, so the tribulations are for purification. How do we know that the tribulation is my past karma that I have to suffer, or for purification that Krishna has given?
Well, if you're a devotee, you don't have that kind of same past karma. Are you a devotee?
Trying.
Trying, okay. Then the tribulation is something else. Read the verse in purport, yes, twinda gopamata vinda bahoswa karma. It's right there. That's this distinction between Yogamaya and Mahamaya. Same topic.
This question is from Prakash Narayan Govindan. The Lord's original Sat Chit Ananda form is covered by his Yogamaya potency during his earthly pastimes, so that persons who he doesn't want to show the form to cannot see his original form. In the spiritual world, does the Lord's original Sat Chit Ananda form ever get covered? Does this happen between when a living entity gets a tinge of envy of the Lord and when that Atma falls down to the material world?
Well, sounds like a two-part question. The first part is there's only the internal potency. So it's not that they cannot see his personal form. Now we have pastimes of the resident of Vrindavan, and they're not because of their intimacy of love. That's where this avidya word comes in the verse. They're not seeing him as the personality of Godhead. They're seeing him as they're seeing him in their relationship. But, that's by the action of the internal potency, not the external potency. They see him and them and themselves as ordinary. They have spiritual forms. They're spiritualized forms. That's discussed in several places. But they don't see like that because of the internal potency, Yogamaya potency. And the second part of his question I couldn't exactly understand. What does it say again?
In the spiritual world, does the Lord's original Sat Chit Ananda form ever get covered?
That I addressed.
Does this happen between when a living entity gets a tinge of envy of the Lord and when that soul falls down to the material world?
Well, yeah, it's the language is a little awkward, but okay. Yes. When there's aversion to the personality of Godhead, one can't see him as he is. That's Mahamaya. Okay?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Yeah.
How while performing a service, living as a devotee, how can one understand that Guru and Krishna are pleased?
They'll smile. But yeah, we understand things through Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's how we understand things. So, did Guru was pleased? What's the standard? Okay?
Is it we get more services or internally
no.
There is a satisfaction? Or?
That's a whole other interesting topic. Yeah, you feel something, but that feeling something may, if you're really pleasing Guru and Krishna, you're feeling humbled, not... There's this nice little section in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, spoken by, I believe it's Narada, where the nature of a devotee is, they're not hankering for satisfaction, they're hankering for pleasing Krishna. And what is it, when does the bell ring when you've, okay, now I've pleased Krishna? There's always this sense of insufficiency. Even for, not only for us, because there is genuinely insufficiency, but for very elevated souls, there's a feeling of insufficiency. That, it's transcendental. The commentary then says it's considered by elevated souls to be one of the detriments to Shuddha Bhakti is there's a feeling of sufficiency, or I'm feeling satisfied. Then it's about me. So it's good for us to want to feel satisfied. So, with that sense of satisfaction, that then the allure of material enjoyment dissipates. Pram drishvandavartate, higher taste. But in more elevated stages, so anyway. Yeah, yenat masu prasidati, following your statement. It's right in the Bhagavatam. I'm feeling fulfilled. And largely, because we're covered, there's a mix. Like, let's say someone cooks a feast, and they're wanting very much to see, is everyone, did it come out well? So there's a, Krishna must have been pleased. And, yay, I did it. there's mix. So that I'm feeling satisfied is not, what do we understand the meaning of happiness and satisfaction or anything in our conditioned state? And in the transcendental state, there's always profound humility. And even in the midst of the profound humility, let's take, Srila Prabhupada, who was very bold, at the same time, very humble. It's not ordinary. Transcendental consciousness is hard to compare to ordinary consciousness. So, we go by the authority of Guru Sadhu Shastra.
Next question.
Yeah.
On the topic of tribulations, this is from Sunita, I think Sachi Mata Mata. On the topic of tribulations faced by devotees, a lady started coming to the temple recently and is developing attraction to Lord Krishna, reading a lot of Srila Prabhupada books. Books, chanting a lot, etc. In Friday, her mother passed away due to COVID-19. She was a healthcare worker, died serving other COVID patients. Now this person who is in Canada can't go to see her mother's body in New York. She is asking me why Krishna has done this to me after so much chanting and reading that I can't even see my mother one last time. I'm not able to give a convincing answer.
Send her that YouTube link, Victim Mentality. I sent it to you, right?
No, I didn't.
Victim Mentality. I'll send it to you when I go upstairs. And you can forward it to her. This is how she can answer. It's very Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj speaking. It looks like as he's in Vrindavan, self-quarantined in Vrindavan. But it's a classic. It's like so philosophical, and at the same time so practical. He's really a brilliant speaker. Yeah. Bhakti Vigyan. He what?
He does seminars almost every day now, from America, Russian speaking, from all over the world. Right now it's happening.
He's a very elevated personality.
In the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, this is from Satish Bhatnagar. In the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, who does the Hare refer to if Rama is referenced to Lord Balaram?
The Hara, the potency of. And Vokita becomes Hare. That's what it means. The potency of. The internal potency of.
Question from Hari. How do we understand and reconcile the differences in philosophy, tattva, even within the Vaishnava path?
There's variety in the spiritual realm. That's how we understand it. Different moods, varieties of moods, varieties of love, and their expression of that rendering the scripture comes out this way, that way, because of varieties.
That's all.
That's it. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.